There's no life that couldn't be immortal. By Gay Little Earring. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Niall may not have known much about dying and waking up again, but she knew when to get the hell out of Dodge. Indus had made her sit through too many sci-fi movies not to know that much. It was shockingly easy to leave the Army compound unnoticed, after which she bartered her illegal way onto a plane back home. She was probably a wanted criminal by now, but she found it hard to let that bother her too much while surrounded by the comfort of her family, her home. Even the nosy neighbor, who'd have sold Niall out just for something exciting to happen, contributed to Niall's daily feeling of peace. She'd died, and she'd be damned before she let anything get to her now. In either case, she was, and felt, safe, like she hadn't been, since she was a kid, and it was a rare luxury to languish in that which everyone else took so for granted. Live, laugh, love, indeed. Only then, there were the dreams. She hadn't yet told Indus about them, mentioned them only vaguely to their mother, and she knew damn well she was in denial. One did not simply believe that immortality was real and happening to oneself, only to turn around and go, "Oh, these dreams? Nah, just my imagination." Unless she was dead, and the afterlife was just very, very weird, but Occam's razor, or whatever. There were four of them. She couldn't catch all of their names, just Booker, who they talked about more than two, and Joe, who was also Yusuf, which she only knew because the third man kept repeating it to him in a soothing voice. They spoke in different languages, which was interesting, because she understood that they weren't speaking English or any other language she knew how to speak, yet also the meaning of the words they were saying. Even the snatches of French she did know how to speak in waking life sounded strange and different to her ear, although she had to admit she was more accustomed to Canadian French anyway. But then that changed as well, the understanding of the languages, depending on whose head she was in, which was extremely weird, thanks for asking. She'd go entire conversations only understanding every third word if she was dreaming from Booker's point of view. He knew far fewer languages than the others, which Niall found curious, only insofar as it seemed extremely rude to talk about him when they knew he couldn't fully understand them. Something had gone wrong, though. Niall knew that much. Booker had done something, which was presumably why they were strapped to beds in some facility somewhere. Go figure. Which was exactly where Niall stopped thinking about things. It was all good and well to become whatever flavor of superhuman she was right now, but she was in no way equipped to save four people from medical experimentation. Plus, she didn't even know where they were. "Niall," her mother said, pulling Niall from her thoughts. They were sitting across from each other in the breakfast nook, Niall playing with the chipped ceramic of her mug as her mom read the newspaper. "Niall," her mother said, bringing her back to reality, "look at this." "Ah," Niall dropped her head into her hands. "Fuck." The newspaper says, "Fire started in research facility, London." Last night, Merrick Pharma's London-based research facility saw a bit of trouble when a fire broke out in the research department. CEO Stephen Merrick has sought to reassure the public that none of the leading research on cancer treatments were lost to the fire, although for safety measures, he has chosen to relocate part of his team of scientists to the American branch until further notice. Merrick's reasoning for this is that the American lab should hopefully be more up-to-date with safety measures, and reassures the public that this will not harm the estimated time of trial periods for his new regenerative cancer drug. Earlier this month, Merrick was wrapped up in a scandal with former employee James Copley, although the allegations made have since been proven to be false. Merrick did not decide to press further charges. "Don't look at me like that," Niall said in a tone she refused to admit was a whine. Her mother's eyebrow arched even more, lips pursing ever tighter. "I'm not looking at you like anything," she lied. "Just wondering how your father would feel if he was next to us at the table right now." "Cheap and dirty tricks, Ma." Niall turned her head so her ear rested on the cushion of her forearms. There was no question about it now. "How the hell am I going to break into a research facility?" "Mind your language. You can ask Indus about it when you go pick him up later today." "I'm in a crisis," Niall said with little conviction, more for show than anything else. "Surely you won't make me do chores right now." Her mom tenderly ran her finger down the bridge of Niall's nose, over her closed eyelids. It was a gesture that had so often foregone instructions. "Get," Niall's mom told her. Niall, of course, didn't really mind. It had been an adjustment when she'd first returned home, the way the house was always quiet. She couldn't help but feel like being a Marine had made her miss Indus's growing up. One day she'd been 20, and Indus had been starting his sophomore year of high school. The next he was off to college, and Niall didn't even see him anymore. Not that she'd seen him often while on duty, but that felt different. The house was supposed to be full of life, full of his terrible taste in music, his shoes left haphazardly by the door where someone could trip over them. They still called a lot, Skype and text and everything in between, but Niall was so happy to have him home for spring break. To that effect, she let Indus drag her around his dorms by the hand, introducing her to everyone who cared as his big sister, you know, Niall. It filled her heart with joy to sit in Indus's dorm room, helping pack. It wasn't as if Indus had known spring break was coming for ages or anything, and to be constantly interrupted by someone at the door popping in to say hi or bye, or to invite him to this or that thing when they all got back. "Okay, Mr. Popular," Niall said after what felt like the 10th time. "Are you finally ready to go, or are there still people outside waiting for a picture and an autograph?" Indus made a face Niall couldn't decipher, but hid it quickly. "Nope," he said, turning away from her. "All good." There was a nervous energy to him as they hauled the stuff to the car, something that continued as Niall maneuvered the car onto the highway. She chalked it up to the stress of the day. Either way, it distracted her from her own problems, specifically the newspaper clipping burning a hole through the back pocket of her jeans. Niall was about to broach the subject of, well, everything, when Indus beat her to it. "Can I tell you a secret?" he said in the sort of rush that comes with almost backing out of saying something at all. Niall looked at him from the corner of her eye. It wasn't as if they told each other absolutely everything, not really, but Indus had never had a secret that necessitated stewing in it. "Of course," she said, "you can always tell me anything." "It's not a bad secret." "Should I have expected it to be?" Indus laughed and shook his head, relaxing slightly. He sat next to her in the passenger seat, staring out the window. It seemed like he was very deliberately not looking at her. "I think..." He broke off and pushed his fingers to his cheek, chewing it to pieces. "Hey," Niall said when the silence stretched too long. "Everything all right?" "Yes," Indus took a deep breath. "I think I'm non-binary." Niall felt her eyebrows rise halfway up her forehead. "Oh, I was not expecting that one." Then she shrugged. "Okay, thank you for letting me know." She reached over to rub the back of Indus's head. "Have you told Mom yet?" "No," Indus shrugged, leaning back into her touch. "Okay. You know she'd still love you either way, right?" "I know, but it's not about that. It's not like I don't... Oh, I don't know. Trust her. I know she'd be fine with it, but..." Indus trailed off and started fiddling with the latch on the glove box. "It's still new," Niall filled in the blank. "I understand wanting to keep it to yourself for a bit. wasn't like I had my first kiss with a girl and immediately came running to you lot, either. The car was quiet as Niall switched lanes. Do I need to do anything? New pronouns or whatever? Indus laughed loud and bright. New pronouns or whatever? God, Niall, you're so old. Hey, Niall flicked Indus on the ear. Respect your elders. Stop! Ow! Indus laughed. No, stop. It's fine. It's fine. You don't have to change anything. Niall risked taking her eyes off the road. Indus was looking back at her, eyes bright with a smile. I don't know yet. Maybe I'll find something that suits me 10 minutes from now, or maybe I'll never change anything. He stretched his hands out in front of him and drummed his fingers on the dashboard. I know it's a bit unconventional, but I'll stick with what I've got for now. Okay. You'll let me know if that changes, though, right? Of course. He went back to staring out the window, mellow and more relaxed than he'd been all afternoon. I love you, Niall said, looking back at the road. I'm proud of you. Indus made a half-hearted gagging sound, flicking through the radio stations. Niall took a deep breath. Trade you secret for secret? What, you thought I was giving mine away for free? This is kind of awkward, but... So I think I'm immortal now? So tell me again, Indus said, when Niall sat down with her coffee. You're immortal, or in any case indestructible, which isn't the same thing, and you have dreams about other people who are also immortal slash indestructible? Right. And you know they're like you because... I told you. I see them die in dreams sometimes, but they're right back the next night. Indus chewed his lip. But that doesn't make any sense. You see them dying in your dreams, I get that. But they're dreams. They don't always mean anything. It just seems strange to assume these people even exist to begin with. Well... Niall dug through her back pocket for the article. There's this... And it's far too coincidental to think that I dreamed of that Booker guy setting fire to the facility they're being held in before a very similar sort of facility spontaneously catches fire. She slid the clipping toward Indus. Also, I did some Googling after I read this. You'll be very pleased to know my brain doesn't hate me enough to make me dream of Weasley British men without reason. Indus pulled the article towards himself with one finger, the other hand covering his laugh. I'm sorry, a clipping? You have a newspaper clipping to do with your superhero awakening? Do you have a file that says top secret on it, big red letters as well, or... Niall made to snatch the article back. Do you want to help or not? I want to help, and it's lunch for the article, but Niall was quicker. I'm sorry for making fun of you. Give me the silly spy thing. Niall sipped her coffee as she let Indus read through the article. So what do you think? Indus chewed the inside of his cheek, eyes flying over the page a second time. Niall, I'm not really sure what you want me to say to this. His sudden change in tone nagged at her. It was easy to fall into old patterns with Indus, joke and laugh, and pretend she was only home for a few weeks before she'd get back to the real life that she'd had to leave behind. The reality was that it wasn't so simple. That there had been an underlying stress to her day-to-day life since she'd died. She knew about PTSD, of course, about getting hurt in action and getting help for it, but she couldn't exactly picture a therapist dealing with this particular set of problems. Niall smoothed her thumb up and down over the ear of her mug, focusing on the feeling of porcelain beneath her fingertips. I don't know, she admitted. Only, I know you're more well-versed in sci-fi stuff. She trailed off, knowing how it sounded, and Indus very kindly didn't point out that his movies and comics were fictional. He put his hand over Niall's. It'll be okay, he said with a confidence Niall knew he didn't feel. Do you have a pen? We might as well start by breaking this into more manageable pieces. Step 1. Find out where. American branch? Step 2. How to infiltrate? Step 3. Throw Niall off building. See if she survives. Step 3. Actually. Plan heist. To be determined. Step 4. Enact heist. Live happily ever after. Literally. What about that guy? Indus asked later as Niall was turning into their street. What guy? Niall said, keeping an eye out for parking. The guy from the article, the one that made allegations against the most honorable and esteemed Mr. Merrick. Niall saw Indus make air quotes from the corner of her eye and snorted. Okay, what about him? She started pulling into an empty spot. Well, he might be an inn. Niall parked the car, and Indus hopped out before she could interrogate him on what he meant. He was up the front steps and pressing the doorbell at incessant intervals, leaving Niall to start getting his bags from the trunk. She shook her head. From inside, Niall could hear their mother loudly asking God why he had chosen to bless her with such annoying children, and then Indus was throwing himself into her arms, bright white smile pressed to her hair. It tugged at Niall's heartstrings to see them like that. Far enough away that they were a unit separate from her, it put her in mind of what a blessing it had been to wake up from dying. That if she hadn't, they would have had no choice but to be a unit without her. Several moments before Niall had lost consciousness, back when she'd been killed, there'd been a moment of acceptance. A moment during which she knew without a doubt that she was about to die. She hadn't put much thought into it, nothing so complex and wordy as, "Please, God, please let me see my family one last time before I go." But there had been a fleeting thought, a wish that was granted now, standing on the curb outside the house she grew up in. Niall felt her heart clench in her chest and turned back to the car, reaching deeper into the trunk to hide her face. A gentle hand on her shoulder startled her. "Need some help, sweetie?" her mom asked. "No, Mom," Niall smiled at her. "I'm all right." Her mom nodded, took Niall's face between her hands, and smoothed her thumbs over the apples of Niall's cheeks. "Where's Indus?" Niall asked, leaning into the moment. Her mom snorted. "In the kitchen." "Ah," Niall couldn't help her own grin. "Tell him I'll bring the bags to the hallway, but not a single step further." Niall watched her mom go back to the house and closed her fingers around the crucifix hanging from her neck. Something bothered her. There was some half-remembered conversation tugging at her memory, returning to her in chunks. The actual words eluded Niall, kept slipping from her mind as soon as she thought she'd closed her fingers around them. But the feeling was a phantom ache inside her heart. These immortals, because that's what she remembered the conversation from, some slow moment she witnessed in a dream. They were lonely. The sort of bone-deep loneliness that isn't helped or abated by being around other people. Standing there beneath the early spring Chicago sun, hearing her family chatter away and go about their routines in the house she grew up in, it sent a shiver down Niall's spine. That, Niall had to admit to herself, that fact that all four of them felt so alone in the world, albeit to differing degrees, was the scariest part of her newfound immortality. Notes. Lab again. Booker and third guy left alone together while Jay and the lady were... presumably getting tests done on them. I don't know. Talked about family. Man 3 said B was their family. And B said it wasn't the same, that he didn't get it. Man 3, not happy about that. Said B wasn't the only one with family before. Didn't elaborate. Old rehash conversations? B tried to respond, but started crying. Is this normal? Is this how they all feel? Like maybe they can't even rely on each other? I don't know what to think. How this all ties in with the underwater dreams. Wondering if my dreaming about them is affected by my own situations. Almost home, but not yet. Miss my family too. Niall let her eyes close, losing herself to the gentle tug and scrape of her mother's fingers through her hair. Her brain was swimming with things to think about, and she found herself comforted by the familiarity of hearing Indus puttering about in the other room, the TV with the volume turned low, and the deft way her mom sectioned off her hair. She'd taken out the Army-compliant braids when she'd left, but there was something reassuring about it now. Letting her mom redo them gave her peace of mind, made her feel some greater semblance of the control necessary to tackle the mountain of problems before her. So far, Niall had very little to go on. She'd been able to locate the American branch of Merrick Pharmaceuticals and noted down any and all visual details she could from her dreams, hoping it would give her a better understanding of where exactly the others were kept. But all this meant very little in terms of security. She had the guy, though, James Copley. Indus had been right. Niall spent an afternoon Googling the man and had almost jumped for joy at the results. The allegations Copley had made against the company, that they were keeping people as lab rats, paired with the way Merrick Pharma's lawyers had done an excellent job of painting him as a raving lunatic, all the damage it had done to his reputation, ensured Copley would probably never work again. But Niall knew she'd have an ally in him, if she could get a hold of him, and that was enough for her. Finding him had been less straightforward than finding Merrick's American facility. He didn't exactly advertise his personal information. Smart guy, Niall thought. But Niall was smarter. There probably existed an easier way to do this, but while Niall was hardly technologically incapable, the extent of her digital figuring stuff out knowledge ended with basic piracy and advanced social media searches. None of that had beat the pure and simple method of manually entering variations of Copley's name in the recipient email address bar to see what wasn't immediately rejected as a non-existent email address. Either Niall was a genius, or some unrelated J. Copley had a very strange email waiting for them in their inbox. She was feeling slightly anxious about it if she had to tell the truth. Surely this wouldn't be her only shot at saving the others, if it didn't work out, but it seemed the easiest by far. If James Copley decided not to help her, things would get a whole lot more complicated very quickly. Niall released a shuddering breath through her nose. You all right, baby?
Yeah, Ma, I'm fine.
Yeah, her mom said, you will be. If Niall closed her eyes, she could pretend she was still young. Could almost hear the clacking of the plastic charms at the ends of her braids. She didn't close her eyes. Instead, Niall waited until her mom finished the braid she was working on. Niall's mom hated being interrupted, and climbed off the floor into her lap. Oh, sweetie. Her mom smelled like the perfume she'd been wearing since Niall was 2 years old, of hair product and their family's laundry detergent, and home. Niall pressed her face against her mom's neck, squeezing her arms tight around her mom's shoulders. The rhythmic sweep of her hand across Niall's back was both calming and made her heart ache with memories. I don't know if I can do this, Mom. I do, her mom said, all gentle sincerity. My brave girl. They sat there, intertwined, Niall's hair half finished, and her eyes dry, even if she felt a good cry might have helped. Do you remember, Niall's mom said into the silence, when you were 6 and we went to the beach? Niall nodded. She remembered sunscreen and sand, jumping over waves and playing football with her dad while Indus and her mom sat on a beach towel and watched. She remembered getting ice cream after, 2 scoops because she was a big girl now. There were 2 dogs there, do you remember, playing on the beach together, rolling around and chasing each other like dogs do. One was a lot smaller than the other one, and you didn't know yet that dogs just play like that together. You thought the little one was in danger, like it was about to be eaten by the bigger one. Niall snorted when her mom's hands tightened around her waist, telling the story animatedly. You were so cute, she said, nosing Niall's cheek. Dad was off somewhere. I don't remember now. But the point is that your hero wasn't there to save the day. You tugged on my sleeve and said, Mom, hold tight to Indus because I need to go and save that dog. You were so determined with that little frown you get sometimes, and I had to catch you by the shoulder before I could explain that dogs just do that. You've always been a hero, Niall. She pulled back and wiped the back of her fingers along Niall's cheek. It's part of who you are to want to help others. There's not a universe I can think of in which you fail at doing so. Thanks, Mom. Her mom hummed. You're welcome, baby. Now get back down there. Let me finish what I started. 2NileFreeman1@gmail.com. Subject, Ray, help needed. Dear Miss Freeman, thank you for reaching out. I am unsure how you came by this email address, but I am sure you can understand that I try not to blindly believe every story sent my way since the incident which occurred with Stephen Merrick. You seem sincere, and I believe there are things you are in need of telling me, as I am in need of telling you certain things, that would be better for both our paranoia's sakes to be addressed person to person in a public setting. Please let me know your general area, and we can agree to meet in whichever public place seems most convenient to both of us. I hope I will not be disappointed, and that if you are not who you say you are, you would do us both the dignity of saying so now. My thanks, James Copley.
Niall, OMG, Indus said.
OMG, because he knew it annoyed her.
Chill, you're making me nervous.
He brought his hand down on Niall's jiggling leg, pushing it into stillness. Niall batted at his hand.
You're nervous. I'm about to tell this man the most insane story he's ever heard.
The gradual slowing of the L train as it pulled into the station didn't help her nerves one bit. Niall was the type of person to rip the Band-Aid off once there was something making her feel uncomfortable. Never without kindness. She didn't believe in toughing things out, but she'd never seen the point in waiting around, feeling on edge. Still, for all her newfound abilities, making the people in front of her go faster as they departed the train was not one of them. Niall shouldered her bag and shuffled her way through the throng of people on the platform. Indus sighed in her ear as he and their mom followed close behind. It had happened to Niall before, the sudden disappearance of stress or nerves when finally faced with whatever was its cause, and Niall found her breathing eased as soon as she spotted him. They had agreed to meet by the overpriced train station coffee shops, easily one of the most public places anyone could conduct a shady meeting in. People streamed in and out of the doors leading onto the street, and most of the tables were occupied with people waiting for their trains. Even if Niall hadn't known what James Copley looked like, it wouldn't have been very hard to spot him. He looked well put together, but too casual to be counted among the people milling about in business wear, and there was a "don't talk to me" energy coming off him in waves. He sat, slumped half over, casting furtive glances as if all he was missing was a newsboy cap beneath which to hide his face. Skittish, Niall's mom said. Niall couldn't blame Copley for his paranoia, with how much Merrick had ruined him. It wasn't just that he was skittish. He had a way about him, a stateliness, even in his slumped position, as if he had suffered several great indignities in quick succession and had a biting determination to get over it. Niall recognized the look. She had seen it on herself the first few days after her death. She took a steady breath. I'll be fine, Niall said, more to herself than anything else. Duh, Indus replied with an eye roll. Keep it respectful, their mom admonished them. But he is right, Niall. Niall bit the inside of her cheek to keep from smiling. Shut up. Copley glanced toward them when they moved in his direction, quick to catch on and even quicker to start making space at the little table for them. Hello, he said, and Niall was surprised to hear his voice was richly accented. You must be Miss Freeman. I am. She stuck her hand out for him to shake, and he did. His grip was firm, confident, and... Back up? Copley continued, looking at Indus and her mother. My children, Mr. Copley, her mom said, dropping into one of the chairs with some measure of grace, have decided they'd rather spend spring break doing this than with me. Ah,
he smiled, easing into it. Can't have that. Copley looked at Indus expectantly, and Indus waved slightly. I'm Indus, he said. Does anyone want any coffee? The slight song and dance, shuffle and reshuffle of settling in and getting their coffee seemed to relax Copley somewhat. He didn't look like he was a second away from taking off running anymore. Anil herself sank into a more casual position. So, Niall said, sipping from her coffee. So. She was trying to remember the careful speech she'd made in the bathroom last night, standing in front of the mirror and rehearsing it to herself. But it seemed so silly now. It didn't matter. Copley swooped in and saved her with his interruption. Before we begin, he said, reaching for a leather messenger bag that rested against one of the legs of his chair. I'd like to ask you whether you recognize, he rifled through several documents, these men. Finney handed her a printout of a painting that looked very old and worn. Niall prided herself on her interest in art history, admittedly being more interested in recent American art history, but her classic European knowledge was more than passable. But the painting didn't ring a bell. To be honest, it didn't even look like any specifically recognizable time period. And Niall couldn't figure out why Copley had... Oh. You do, Copley said, noticing her slightly dropped jaw. Oh, you do. How? Niall looked from Copley back down to the painting, the portrait of Booker and the third man from her dreams, then back up at Copley. Are you? What? Copley waved his hand and shook his head with a small frown. No, but you? Niall nodded emphatically, heart racing with possibilities. Yeah, I'm new. New? He looked to Niall's mom. So these are actually your children, both of them? There was a brief moment of silence before Indus started laughing. You guys just had a whole conversation that was incomprehensible to anyone else, he declared. Copley laughed too, a small huff of air between his lips. My apologies, he said. You have no idea how glad I am to meet you. He turned back to his messenger bag, digging out pens and paper, some sort of file, and a notepad. You'll have to forgive me for being blunt, he said. I'd rather get to business as soon as possible. You may not know, but they are currently in the process of transferring the others from London to America, and it is crucial we strike now, while they are unbalanced. Niall flipped through the file he handed her, blueprints and schedules printed with Merrick Pharma's logo in the corner. It all went by very quickly. Hold up. Wait. She shook her head to clear it. What are we even trying to do? I mean, save them, sure, but what even happened? Niall couldn't help but be reminded of her time as a Marine, receiving brisk orders without too much back and forth, having to listen up and figure it out. Only she'd known the people in command then, trusted them, and their information. I don't even know you, she said. No offense. How do you even fit into all of this? I wasn't expecting you to know about the whole, she waved her hand, immortality thing. Inexplicably, that made Copley's jaw set. There was something going on behind his eyes, something Niall did not like seeing there. She squinted at him and asked with growing apprehension, What? Copley's notes. Booker. Napoleon. About 200 years ago. Cause of death, hanging. Relevant? Andromache. Oldest. Dates pre-ancient Greece. Cause of death, unknown. Niccolo and Yusuf. Crusades. Cause of death, each other. Never a clear answer. They just say it's each other. Quinn, unclear, witch trials. According to Booker, survived beheadings, explosions, starvation, does affect the body upon revival. bone and limb regrowth period affected by age, time passed since first revival. So you're telling me, Niall said, arms crossed over her chest as she leaned back in her chair. You're telling me you're the reason those guys are locked up right now? And that Booker guy, Indus added. Right, and Booker. Whatever respect Niall had had for Copley had dwindled very quickly as he explained his involvement in the Immortals' capture. Even Booker, who Niall had known was somehow involved in something, even for him, her contempt was growing. She hadn't expected the whole thing to be that bad. Copley squared his shoulders and looked her straight in the eye as he replied, "Yes, that's what I'm telling you." She could at least appreciate his honesty, his unflinching gaze as he admitted his own responsibility. "But I never expected things to go this far, and as soon as I saw it go wrong, I tried to do something." He rubbed his hands over his face. "I tried, Niall. You have to understand. There were circumstances. You have to believe I truly believe this could change the face of science and medicine forever." Something Niall had noticed over her life was the way people who felt judged would hurriedly fill any silences, and Copley didn't disappoint. "It's just," he said, leaning forward in his seat to appeal to her, "it's my wife, Booker's family. It changes something within you when you lose someone that important to you. We thought we could help." Niall's mom, who had been silent the entire time, snorted. "Oh, that is horseshit." Niall could count on a single hand the amount of time she'd heard her mother swear. It wasn't as if she was a prude. She just knew her children too well to give them that sort of ammunition against her. "Mr. Copley," her mom continued, "if that's what you tell yourself to fall asleep at night, allow me the honors of being the one to burst your bubble. My husband died when Niall was 10 years old. And do you know what we did? We grieved. We grieved, and we mourned. And Niall had ballet recitals and soccer matches with no one in the audience because I was too busy taking care of the toddler. We cried, and we pushed through, and it was hard, Mr. Copley. It was so hard. Do I wish my husband was still with us?" She scoffed and pressed her fingers to her lips to keep them from trembling. "Yes, of course I do. But not for a single second would I endanger other people to achieve that goal." Copley looked taken aback, slightly embarrassed, but Niall's mom wasn't done. "Now, I've not had the privilege of speaking with the other man, but if he's truly as old as he says he is, shame on him. Shame on you, Mr. Copley, for clearly being a well-educated and intelligent man who should have known better than to think wealthy men in power would let an opportunity like this pass by unharmed. I will let my daughter go with you to save these people, because she is an adult who decides for herself, and because she is strong and capable. But for her to be put in this position to even begin with, shame on you." Niall could see Indus from the corner of her eye, punching the air quietly. "Yes, Mom," he whispered emphatically. Copley floundered for words. "I apologize," he settled on eventually. "I hadn't realized. I shouldn't have assumed. But I am trying to make it better. I really am." Niall nodded, having had enough groveling for one day. "It's fine," she said, pulling the file back toward her. "I believe you. But we really need to get planning now." The kitchen table was covered in papers, and it reminded Niall of school nights, assignments due, and crinkled homework that didn't survive her haste to clean the table in time for dinner. Only Copley looked out of place, dressed incongruously fancy next to Niall's sweats and Indus's basketball shorts. He tapped away at his little laptop, sleeves rolled up to his elbows as he ran the plan by them. "You received the blueprints I sent you?" "Yep, got 'em right here." "What did you think?" Niall sighed. "How useful are these even going to be? I mean, she flipped through them, eyes scanning the pages. Sure, it's good to know where all the doors and windows are. But most of this I could have deduced by looking at the pictures of the building on Merrick's website. Not very secret agent-y, Indus added. It's a lab, Copley said, slightly puzzled. It doesn't have, like, emergency escape routes? He said the last part with an uptick to his voice, as if asking a question, and Indus nodded to him to reassure him emergency escape routes definitely counted as secret agency. I found them helpful, Niles' mom said. Takes out the uncertainty of where to go once you're in. Niles grimaced. Does it, though? I still don't know where they're being kept. She pulled the two pages she'd marked with sticky tabs. It could be either of these two floors. There's an extra room at the back, here and here, and I know wherever they're kept has an extra door behind their beds. I saw that in one of the dreams. The first has a connected room here, she pointed, and the other one connects directly into the hallway. There's no telling which is likelier. Let me see. Copley took the pages from her and frowned down at them. He tapped the first one, the extra room Niall had mentioned. This one, fourth floor. Okay. You know this how? Security detail is stationed there. Niall nodded slowly, then shook her head. No, sorry. You know that how. Copley smiled like he was trying not to, smug and pleased. I'll let you into a little secret about men like Stephen Merrick. For all that they're paranoid, they refuse to admit to themselves where their strengths lie, and more importantly, where they don't. Merrick's security is good. It's very good. But I'm better. Indus's eyes were shining and huge. Niall could tell he was loving the way Copley was finally starting to lean into the action-adventure-techie-hero role, and Niall wouldn't lie and say she didn't feel the goosebumps along her own arms. Mind you, this wouldn't work if I was trying to access lab work. Computer passwords and the like are much more heavily safeguarded. Not that it matters for our purposes, since Merrick seems to think of his guard detail as no more than grunt work. I've been able to bypass the system Merrick uses for scheduling, carefully managed to infiltrate in such a way that even the keenest eye would miss me. Essentially, I run the show now. Impressed silence had descended on the kitchen at Casa Freeman. Indus was the one to break it, muttering in an odd tone. I bought the airline. Thought it would be neater. Niall bit her cheek to keep from laughing at Copley's confused expression. What? Nothing. Carry on. Indus waved his hand. We'll watch Inception for team movie night. Right. In any case, this, paired with the current instability of the Merrick Pharma ecosystem as they work around one of their labs being destroyed, leaves us with an opportunity to exploit. Copley turned his laptop around so they could see his screen. Wow, Niall's mom said, leaning in. He overworks his guards. Niall snorted and scrutinized the guard's schedule. He really does. Are we going to wait till they're so tired they can't fight back? It's slightly more complicated than that, but that's certainly part of it. He dragged the tab over to the side, and Niall saw the same schedule duplicated, except it wasn't. Huh. This won't work for every guard, Copley forewarned, and we'll have to choose carefully which guards won't mind leaving before the next one shows up. Those standing guard in front of the actual room where the immortals are kept would surely notice a fake schedule, but we shouldn't underestimate the advantage it will give us to take out even a single, well-picked element of Merrick's security. He drummed his fingers once, twice, against the kitchen table. I propose we use this on one of the guards that would stop us from actually entering or exiting the building or property. The actual advantage it would give you to take someone out inside the building would be canceled out by how many guards are in there at any given time. But if I know anything, it's that a good exit strategy alone will take you far. Niall scrolled the schedule again. Half an hour. All right, I agree. Let's start from the end. Say we manage to escape the property. We'll have four immortals, me, and presumably you, to a car. Less than half an hour to get gone, accounting for how long it'll take to perform the rescue mission. Copley nodded. I wouldn't count on not being seen leaving the property, though. At some point, we'll have to switch cars. Make sure they keep eyes on the first car as a decoy. It could still be tricky. Niall nodded in silence, picturing the events. Her thoughts were interrupted by Indus saying, Can I come? Can you shoot a gun? Niall said, unimpressed. In the years since I last saw you, have you learned how to shoot a gun? Are you bulletproof? She reached out and flicked his ear. Ow! No, you can't come. He shook his head seriously. No, I mean it. You need a decoy, right? A second getaway driver? They're never going to suspect me. Niall stared at him, incredulous. Of course they won't suspect you. You shouldn't be there to begin with, which is why you won't be there at all. But we'll be far enough away once the car switch happens, right? Indus nudged their mom. Mom, back me up. Niall turned to her, settling back to watch her tear down Indus's plants. To her horror, their mom looked to be seriously considering it. He's right, she said. He might be right, Niall. If you've always been a hero, Indus has always been perfectly capable of worming his way out of trouble. Thank you, Indus said, smug. Couldn't have said it better myself. And in any case, their mom continued before Niall could start arguing, I have another question. She turned to Copley, scrutinizing the schedule. Why are you leaving so much wiggle room in terms of time, if all you need is for the guard to get gone while you leave the facility? Ah, Copley said with something resembling pride in his voice. Because there's one more thing you'll have to get, Niall, while you're in there. Something Merrick would have with him in a place of honor, like a hunting trophy, that Andromache would kill me if I didn't find a way to steal back. The three of them stared at Copley with bated breath. Oh yeah, he was definitely leaning into the action adventure of it all. And Copley clicked to one more tab on his laptop. Her axe. Niall pulled the car into a free spot, checking her appearance one last time in the rearview mirror. Muted makeup, sensible blouse she wouldn't be caught dead in, literally now. Niall looked exactly like the young professional she was not. Being fair to herself, though, Niall had been a professional for a few years now. She'd just been lucky enough it wasn't in the type of profession where pencil skirts were required. The big, black, and bulky backpack on the seat next to her was the sort of thing a work-issued laptop would reside in, if she actually worked for Merrick Pharma, and Niall checked to make sure the gun she had inside it instead had its safety on, before heaving the backpack onto her back. When she got out of the car, Niall bent down as if to adjust her shoe. Casual sneakers, thank God for small mercies, and dropped the car keys. They skidded and came to a stop well hidden from sight beneath the bulk of the car for Copley to retrieve later. Then Niall readjusted her skirt and made her way up to the main office building from the parking lot. Several evenings of planning had led her here to this moment. They hadn't had a wealth of time, not if they wanted to sneak the immortals out before Merrick could get a handle on things again, and as such the plan wasn't anything over-involved. A bit of disguise, some technological fucking around, and the element of surprise would have to do it for them. The American branch of Merrick's company combined an obnoxiously large and modern office building with the laboratory proper standing next to it, attached by a long glass hallway on the second floor. While Copley still had to work some of his techie magic, they determined the office building would be much easier to infiltrate, and from there Niall would head toward the lab, towards the immortals. Niall pushed her way through the big glass doors into the main building, head down as she tapped away at her phone, the way she'd seen so many young professionals do. Merrick Pharma issued key cards to get from the lobby into the main building, and Niall juggled her phone, an empty cup of coffee with an artfully placed lipstick mark over the mouth, and the key card Copley had printed out for her. She scanned the room as she pretended to struggle, taking in the details. To her right was a sleek front desk, dark wood behind which more people in pencil skirts were smiling politely and directing even more people in pencil skirts to a little seating area. Big lilies on low coffee tables. Not enough magazines to entertain the waiting crowd. They were staring at Niall now, unfocused and without malice. Just bored people, waiting to see whether she'd drop one of her items. The whole look of the place, glass and chrome and money, came across as chic and elegant and very expensive. She could almost hear the building speak. "Yes, sirs and ma'ams, of course you want to fund our research. Of course you're in good hands here, in the airy lobby of Merrick Pharma, that gets good light in the afternoons." Niall had to bite her lip to keep from laughing at her own joke. She finally got her belongings under control and made her way to the turnstiles directly in front of her. Several more taps on her phone sent out the signal for Copley to override the security system as Niall swiped her fake card against the machine. Her heart thumped slightly louder in her chest for the brief second it took before the turnstiles rolled over smoothly, allowing her deeper into the building. The trick now, Niall thought, was confidence. Back when she'd taken acting classes for a year, just for fun, the instructor would harp on and on about walking like your character, how the posture and gait would make or break the audience's belief in it. She thought of him now, as she squared her shoulders and held her head up high, walking like Niall Freeman, lab assistant, or something like that. What jobs even exist in pharma anyway? On her way to help create some perfectly legal and ethical medications. She hated to admit it, but it helped. Even when she missed a turn in the maze of hallways, Niall Freeman, lab assistant, simply shook her head and smiled at herself nervously, turned on her heel, and returned to the route she'd mapped out in the blueprints. Left through the hallway, slight right turn to get to the elevators. She decided Niall Freeman, lab assistant, wasn't the type of girl who enjoyed getting stuck in a small box with disgruntled office workers, so she pushed her way through the heavy door and emerged onto the stairwell. It smelled like concrete and cleaning products, and Niall relaxed slightly at how quiet it was. She took the stairs two at a time, feeling strangely comforted by the clean simplicity of the stairway. Presumably none of the fancy investors were in the habit of taking the stairs when they came here. Niall emerged into a hallway on the second floor, sunlight streaming in through the big windows. She could see the lab parking lot from there, a little bench area where several employees were on a smoke break. The irony of scientists trying for a cancer cure smoking was not lost on Niall. The connecting hallway between the office building and the lab was on the other side of the building, but Niall didn't need to be there quite yet. Instead, she made her way to the staff restroom and settled in to wait for the evening. It took her all of 10 seconds to realize how incredibly boring this first part of the mission was about to get. Niall fingered her phone. She put it in her backpack, then she took it out again. In 2 hours, the building would clear out, and Copley would come fetch her car, erasing all signs of her having been in the building. He'd circle back, park in the open-air parking lot intended for lab technicians. Then he, too, would sit and wait for night to fall. By midnight, Niall did not want to think about how long it would be until midnight, cleaning staff would start moving between the floors, and Niall would try to slip out unnoticed. Even her choice of restroom to wait in was the most uninspired move to pick, and Niall sighed. Her reasoning had been this. No one, except those already on this floor, would go all the way up the stairs just to use the toilets on the second floor. This would diminish her chances of discovery, sure, but Niall now realized it also diminished her opportunity to get in on the office gossip, for lack of better things to do. At least there was one thing she had to give Stephen Merrick credit for. However bad the music might be, there were speakers playing tunes in the staff bathroom. It was something to focus on while Niall sat, hunched awkwardly on the closed lid of a toilet. Niall sighed again, readjusted as quietly as she could. She let her head fall back against the wall and closed her eyes, not intending for anything but peace of mind. Unfortunately, the late nights and lack of proper sleep due to the stress of it all finally caught up with her, and without even fully registering it, Niall fell into a deep sleep. "Today?" Nikki asked quietly, craning his neck to get a better look at Booker. "Mm-hmm." Booker stretched as best he could while still mostly tied down. He tapped his finger rhythmically against the hospital bed, watching Nikki's mouth move ever so slightly in translation. "She fell asleep, though." His finger kept at the code, repeating it thrice more before he dropped it and moved on to other meaningless tapping. Nikki'd understood, though, and he nodded minutely. To Booker's left, Andy was fast asleep in her own hospital bed, watching the same events unfold as Booker had through Niall's eyes. Even tied down, shirtless, in just her filthy sports bra asleep, even then, Andy looked dangerous. That was good. That was what they'd need. The bed between Nikki and Andy had Joe, unconscious and regrowing an organ. He wouldn't be out for much longer, even having just been put through the ringer for the scientist's sadistic experiments, and Nikki waited for him to come back around with a small gasp. "Fuck," he said when he got his breath back. "That one sucked." "Hmm." Nikki wanted to reach out and touch him. He wanted the comfort it would provide, not just for Joe, but for himself too. Being unable to do so, however, Nikki settled for picturing all the gory ways Stephen Merrick might come to an end in this life. "Reminds me of when the four of us were in the North, remember that?" Nikki turned to Joe. He blinked, expression pulling into a frown of realization before he managed to force it back into neutrality. Code phrases. Joe hated them. However necessary they were, he found it hard not to associate them with the worst period of their lives. The quiet, harrowing evening they sat together devising them, Quinn still fresh in their minds. Joe's eyes slicked down to Nikki's hand, tapping the same coded message on the side of his bed. "Midnight," he tapped. "Distract guards." "Yeah," Joe said slowly. "I remember. Remind me who it was that did the..." Joe made a face as if trying to remember something. "You know, the thing." "It was me," Andy groaned out from her cot. "You know, you live to be my age and think maybe your family can do you the honor of at least remembering your excellence at drawing attention to yourself." Joe's laugh sounded strained to Andy's ears. He'd been in a fragile sort of way ever since Andy lost her immortality. They'd been lucky, all things considered, that it had been a simple bruise to give her away. A bump of the medical bed against her leg as they wheeled Booker out to the adjoining surgical room. Of course, the doctor hadn't believed it at first. Andy's bandage-covered body could attest to that. But being carefully tortured seemed preferable to simply no longer waking up. "You're awake," Booker remarked, pulling Andy from her reveries. "Am I?" Andy groaned. "I don't know. I still feel half asleep. Like someone should shake me, give me a real wake-up call." She opened one eye to see if Booker had understood. He smiled, somewhat lopsided, and nodded. "Hey, Niall," he whispered. "Wake up." Niall shot upright with a gasp. Her heart was pounding in her chest, racing like she'd just run a marathon. She dropped her chin against her chest and tried to get her breathing back under control, feeling entirely exhilarated. There had never been such a direct communication between her and the immortals. It had solidified something inside her. Not her decision to free them, that would have happened anyway, but maybe just the knowledge that she would be one of them, that she already was. They needed her. She'd known that as soon as she started having the dreams. But now she'd realized something equally important. She needed them. Niall rolled her shoulders back and checked her phone. They'd woken her just in time, half an hour to midnight. Apart from the light of her screen, the restroom was dark and eerily quiet. She turned the torch on her phone on, using it to quickly assemble the final part of her disguise. Her fake office ID went clipped onto her blouse. She pulled on the lab coat she'd had stored in the bottom of her bag and dropped a gun in one of the pockets. She had another gun, something ridiculously small but easy to hide, which went tucked into the waistband of her pencil skirt. Briefly, Niall regretted not having worn boots for extra knife storage, but the feeling went as quickly as it came. Something she'd learned early on in training was the necessity of knowing when enough was enough, when to stop losing sleep over something that would offer only minimally more protection. Niall stashed the empty backpack behind the toilet, running through the plan in her mind one more time. Then Niall stepped out into the night. The building looked different in the dark. The shiny element of appeal, the selling of the dream, all of it was neutralized by lack of employees with bright white smiles to sell it. Now the building just felt tired, dull, like it was sick of pretending. Niall thought maybe the stress was getting to her, and bit back a laugh. Still, she felt more honest moving through the hallways in the dark. With quick and confident steps, she made her way to the far side of the building, all the way to the top. Merrick, it seemed, liked having a view from his office, like an old king surveying the lands he'd conquered. The office had a keypad by the door, like Copley had told her it would. Niall fingered the crucifix around her neck, looking up toward the ceiling. She debated the likelihood of Merrick's actually being so stupid as to keep the same code, since Copley had last used it for some inconsequential, forgettable chore Merrick had had him do. Surely even Merrick wasn't arrogant enough for that. One shot, she decided. She'd have one shot to fill in the right code, and if the door didn't open, Andromache would just have to suck it up. She entered the 4-digit code Copley had given her on an exhale, not giving herself the time to back out. To Niall's great shock and eternal delight, the door swung open. "Oh my God!" Niall couldn't help but whisper. "This man is so stupid." Trying very hard to contain her glee and not break out into a dance right there in the hallway, Niall slipped into Merrick's office. She felt very much like Lucy in the wardrobe to Narnia, and took great care to, like Lucy, leave the door open just a crack. It'd be embarrassing to get this far and then lock herself into Merrick's office by mistake. Merrick's office was like everything else in the building, grand and beautiful, sleek, modern, looking right from the pages from a catalog, except it worked. Even Andromache's axe, mounted on the wall behind the desk, seemed to fit in with the other furniture and decor. It helped that it wasn't the only piece of history in the room. Niall felt a growing disgust at the relics Merrick so casually had on display. Relics that probably cost hundreds of thousands, which probably shouldn't have ever been sold privately at all. It didn't matter now. Niall pushed those thoughts aside and got back to the task at hand. When she plucked it from the wall, the axe was at once both heavier and lighter than she had expected. Holding it up and out from her body, it felt like the natural extension of her arm, yet weighted in a way that implied what great force one could generate with a single swing of it. It looked sharp, too. Deadly. She felt like a little girl again, already devising ways to convince Andromache to let Niall take a spin with it once they got out of there. She'd never used an axe before, never even held one, other than for splitting wood. But she was sure she'd have ample opportunity to learn if she was really going to live as long as the immortal she was there to rescue. Niall smiled to herself, pleased, and threw open the cabinets in search for the axe's case. When she found it and slipped it onto her back, Niall thought it looked for all the world like an instrument case, something she might have seen on her high school classmates who were in band. She admired how easily Andromache had managed to disguise her deadly weapon into something everyday. Niall pulled the door to Merrick's office shut behind her with a heavy click. Then the alarm started wailing. It caught her off guard, and she felt her heart jump against her ribcage as the ear-splitting bellow of it cut through the night silence. It was far louder than she'd ever expected. Niall swore, but refused to panic. It was less than ideal, but it would only require slightly more bullshitting than her original plan had accounted for, and Niall was good at thinking on the go. She covered her ears with her hands and ran toward the connection between the offices and the labs. Being that it was the sole connection between both buildings, guards were already streaming out of it toward her, guns pointed at a 45-degree angle from the floor, hesitant. Niall shook her head, ripping her badge off her blouse. "Dr. Freeman," she yelled. "We need to get to the assets, quickly." The goon on the left started frowning, opened his mouth to say something. "Quick, man," Niall yelled, pushing past him. Some combination of confidence and the tone of voice she'd used, Marine voice, "I'm not taking questions right now" voice, worked. The guard to her right barked orders to his colleague to deal with the intrusion, then turned to Niall as they moved quickly down the hallway. "Fill me in," he asked. "Did you see what happened?" "No," Niall swerved, hoping to God Copley had been right about which room the immortals were being kept in, about the direction she was running in. "I was just coming up with some updates from the boss when the alarm went off." The guard swore far more colorfully than Niall had earlier. "He'll not be pleased with this." Niall barked a grim laugh. She started slowing down minutely, letting the guard get ahead of her as she pretended to catch her breath. It worked in her favor. They came around the corner, face to face with the door that held Niall's future behind it, with the guard standing before it. "We need to get the assets to safety," the guard with Niall barked toward the one guarding the door. "Open up." The woman turned with a sharp nod, keys all a jangle. Niall waited until the key was inserted into the lock, then made use of the guard's backs being turned and dropped the one closest to her with the butt of her gun to his head. He made a strangled sort of noise that had the other guard turning around, but Niall was quicker. She shot the woman's arm where she was reaching for her own gun, then used the momentum of the guard falling slightly sideways to crush her head against the wall, knocking her out. Niall nevertheless took great care guiding the limp guard to the floor, not wanting to do more damage than strictly necessary. As she turned the key in the lock and opened the door, she realized she'd been lucky the commotion hadn't taken more than 15 seconds. The guards stationed within the room were huddled around one of the beds, one of four crammed next to each other, like sardines in a tin. She didn't have much more time to take in the scene, however. "Niall, duck!" She obeyed the voice without a second thought, a fraction of a second too late. The bullet grazed her shoulder as Niall bit back a scream. She straightened and took in the scene before her, gurneys and medical equipment, blood and gore and people. Three guards by Andromache's bed, one of whom was still aiming his gun at Niall herself. Niall only made up her mind about what to do as the bullet was already flying from her own gun. She'd planned for this mission to go as smoothly and safely as possible, but it was different being faced with the horrors of it face to face. These guards, these doctors, they knew what they were doing. They knew they had people locked in here, that they were willing to kill whoever came through the door with no questions asked. Two shots. The guard dropped unceremoniously to the floor, clearing Niall's line of sight for the others. Andromache had an iron grip on one of the guard's sleeves, stopping him from getting to the gun tucked by his side. Niall dropped him too, turning to aim toward the last person standing over Andromache. She realized now that the third person wasn't a guard at all, but rather a woman in a lab coat, valiantly holding up a scalpel. "Don't move." The doctor, Kozak, Niall knew from the dreams, said. Her hand moved from in front of her own body to instead rest the knife edge of the scalpel against Andromache's throat. "I'll kill her if you move." "No!" Joe fought against the bonds in the bed next to Andromache. Niall didn't get it. "She's immortal," Niall said, confused about why she had to explain that. "She'll just come back." "No, she won't," Booker said from her left. "Niall, please put the gun down." "What is going on?" Niall demanded, feeling suddenly very annoyed by the sudden change of situation. She'd had a plan, which she'd already had to adjust, thank you very much, and this was not a variable she had accounted for. "What do you mean she won't come back?" "She lost her immortality," the man called Niccolo said. "It's her time." "Put it down," the doctor called again. Niall could see a tiny bead of blood well up at Andromache's throat. She lowered her gun. "I'm not leaving them here," Niall said, defiant. "They're coming with me one way or another." Kozak shrugged. Her eyes were very cold, and behind them was a sharp shrewdness that sent a chill along Niall's arms. "I know what I've lost," the doctor said. "I'll let you take the men." "Not acceptable," Joe called out. "We're not leaving without her." "You're very welcome to wait until backup comes," Kozak told him. "I'll let you stay together forever across every lab I will take you to." Niall didn't have time for this, villainous speech or no. She inched her way over to Booker's bed next to Andromache and the doctor. Her eyes never left Kozak, whose eyes in turn were glued to Niall. "No sudden movements," Kozak told her. Several beds over, Joe made more noises of protest, but Niall wasn't listening. She put her body between the bed Booker was tied to and the one Andromache was looking at her from, with a calm sort of focus. It was funny how the person in the most danger seemed to be the steadiest one in the room. Her position had Niall's back turned toward Booker. She pressed the small of her back against his hand, leaning over him to untie the hand farthest from her first. She felt him tense when his hand made contact with the gun still tucked in Niall's waistband. It was all the communication they could afford. The doctor was staring at her intently, and even the tiniest movement could give them away and ruin Niall's final plan. Booker's first hand was free. Niall angled her body even more toward Andromache and the doctor as she fumbled with the second set of cuffs. She felt Booker's hand creep up under her lab coat and suppressed a shudder. When he grasped the gun firmly and slid it from Niall's skirt, Niall finished undoing the ties on his hand. Risking taking her eyes off Kozak for a brief moment, she turned to Booker. "I'll let you take care of..." She waved her hand in the direction of his still tied feet. Booker nodded, looking her right in the eye. "I'll take care of it," he said, and she believed him. Niall ran awkwardly toward Andromache's other side, feeling the doctor's gaze never leave her once. She shuffled to Joe's side. "Yusuf," she whispered, "close your eyes." The shot rang out loud in the small space, blood and gore exploding onto the side of Joe's face. "God," Booker exclaimed, "that felt fucking good." Andromache's head thunked back onto the bed and she sighed loudly. "Almost fucking deafened me, asshole. I don't heal from that shit anymore." Booker's laughter whooped through the room. Joe sighed like he'd had the breath punched out of him, melting back into the bed. "Untie me," he told Niall. She made quick work of his cuffs, leaving him to sort out his own feet. "Thank you." Joe's smile, though small with exhaustion, was like the sun breaking through the clouds. Even grimy with old blood and sweat, even bare-chested and skin pebbling with the cold, he felt like a light in the dark. Niall took his hand and squeezed, smiling back at him. "I didn't think to bring extra clothes," Niall said to the room at large. "Sorry." Andromache shook her head and laughed. "Last thing on my mind right now, kid. Don't worry about it." Niall grinned and went to free Niccolo. Joe had gotten himself free and moved toward where Booker was helping Andromache. Niall watched in surprise as Joe folded Booker into his arms, into the tightest hug Niall thought she'd ever seen.
"Te un cor, Ancunar,"
Joe said, then turned his face more into Booker's temple and continued too quietly for Niall to hear. She turned to Niccolo when Booker's shoulders started shaking with his sobs, unwilling to intrude on the moment. Niccolo caught Niall's hand when she freed his. "Thank you, Niall," he said, eyes intense on her own. "It's lovely to meet you at last. I'm Nikki. Niall, Niall replied, even though he knew that already. Nikki smiled up at her, small and unbelievably kind. She helped Nikki free himself while the others had started divulging corpus of their clothes. No longer strapped to the beds, the immortals looked ridiculous in old in their socks and underwear, and Niall had to cover her mouth with her hand on a snort. Booker looked up at her and winked. What? He spread his arms out from his body. It doesn't please you to see us naked? He still had tear tracks on his face, hair in disarray and matted down with dried blood on one side. It didn't matter. You look like a miracle, Niall said. You all do. Andromache snorted, then winced as she pulled on the lab coat Kozak had been wearing. Booker a miracle? She shook her head. Wait till you see him first thing in the morning, hungover and stumbling his way into the kitchen to pour cereal directly from the box into his own mouth like an animal. That was one time. No, Nikki said, it wasn't. He cuffed Booker very gently around the ear, then pressed a kiss into his hair. So, Andromache turned toward Niall. What's the plan? Copley's in a car downstairs. We've made sure there won't be a guard outside, just the ones still in the building. But I think they're still trying to deal with the intrusion into Merrick's office. We should be able to get out easy enough. Andromache nodded. You've got my Labrys? Niall said. Is that the same as an axe? Andromache grinned. I'm Andy. Niall. Well then, Niall. Andy reached over and squeezed her shoulder. Let's go. The first several minutes in Copley's car were spent filling them in on how the mission went. There was a certain hostility between Copley and the three out of four immortals, as if they hadn't quite forgiven him for what he'd helped Booker do yet. The next several minutes were spent in tense silence. Everyone's eyes going to the rearview mirror with every set of headlights that passed by behind them. When they'd been on the highway for a little bit and felt safe in the relative obscurity of the amount of cars still around them, Nikki leaned forward from the back seat, putting his head between Copley and Niall's seats. Hey, he said. You and Booker make a good team. Oh, yeah? Niall picked at her sleeve. Thought he was the reason y'all were stuck in that place to begin with. He was, Joe shrugged. He's making it up to us. Andy set the fire in the first lab, Andy said. She stretched this way and that, the joints of her back popping satisfyingly with the movement. Plus he shot that fucking doctor. Apparently we're perfectly matched in destruction, Niall. Booker smiled at her when she turned. Hey, are you interested in explosives at all? Niall frowned. The whole car was silent for a beat before they all burst into laughter. Interested in explosives? Niall snorted. What the hell does that even mean? Teasing Booker had all of them relaxed by the time Copley drove up to Indus's tiny car. If someone were to see them now, they'd look less like fugitives escaping a dangerous situation, and far more like a troop of drunk friends looking to continue their wild night elsewhere. Niall stood back as the immortals piled into Indus's car, feeling for all the world like she was watching one of those moments play out, that she'd otherwise only have realized to be transitional several years from now. She watched as Indus jumped on Booker's explosives question, watched the immortals tease Indus equally for it, watched them be gentle and respectful toward him. Copley sidled up to her. Hey, he said quietly. He twirled the car keys around his finger, round and round, a bright sound in the dark and quiet night. Will you be all right? Niall smiled at him. You're worried about little old me? I can handle myself just fine. She nudged him with her shoulder. I know, Copley said. Niall softened and put her arm around him in a sideways hug. You be careful out there, all right? She watched Copley get back into the car, reverse, and drive off into the night. Five sets of eyes were watching her when she turned back to Indus and the immortals, though everyone but Andy and Indus were polite enough to pretend they hadn't been staring. Niall rolled her eyes at Indus's grin. She took the passenger seat and buckled her seatbelt, already bickering with Indus about his taste in getaway music. As they drove off into the night, Niall came to a realization. She knew that dying and coming back to life made her different to her family. They'd die, and she would live. But the rescue mission had settled something inside her. The future wouldn't be so bad, she thought, as long as she had her new family by her side. The end.